Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
Nefarious. Say it with me, stock nerds and market lovers. Nefarious. That is what the mutual fund industry is when it's left to the brokers. Nefarious. Nefarious. Fidelity. Nefarious. Mutual funds on Fidelity. Nefarious. Nefarious. Which was a take on the 90s song. Notorious. More nefarious, Daniel. I'm going to read for you. U.S. probes Fidelity on obscure fee. They're all obscure. And you stock nerds and market lovers with the 401ks and the IRAs that have mutual funds are getting gouged. Well, I am with Vanguard. Or I only do the free ones. You can't afford free if you knew how things were routed. So now let me just read this to you, stock nerds and market lovers. By the way, welcome to another edition of Your Money Radio. It's Tim Razor. Danny Stewart is live with me in studio. He's live with you too. And Don Vandenborg joins us this week, 855 Real Wealth. If you like the strategies to which you hear espoused on the show and in the videos every night, which I'll talk about in a moment, give us a call. We'd love for you to join the family. The more the merrier. We keep growing because of you and the word of mouth. So let me get on with this. I'm really stoked to tell people that what we've been saying for years now is actually making it into the print media. So here we go. U.S. probes Fidelity on obscure fee. The Labor Department is investigating Fidelity investments over an obscure and confidential. What the hell? Let's just pause it. What the hell was not in the article, Daniel? How can the fee be freaking confidential? Like, it has to be disclosed.
Top secret.
Man, this is why
it's blacked out.
This is why this shop is fiduciary. We do the videos. I said I will speak. We do five videos a week, one podcast a week, all in the effort to be more transparent than any other firm in the world, to show you the strategies to which we espouse, how we do what we do for clients. So it's never some kind of black curtain. But listen to this. The Labor Department, not the SEC, the pick and axe department of the U.S. government, Daniel.
Yep, yep.
The Labor Department is investigating Fidelity investments over an obscure and confidential fee it imposes on some mutual funds, according to a person familiar with the inquiry. The annual charge, which Fidelity calls an infrastructure fee. They call it an infrastructure fee, is aimed at companies selling shares on the asset manager's fund platform and was described in a 2017 internal Fidelity document reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. The fee, which appears to have been implemented in 2016, is designed to ensure that each fund firm meets a minimum required payment to Fidelity. It's like the capos, man. It's the mob. You got to pay
shakedown,
up.
Shakedown.
You got to pay up. It's racketeering charges, man. No, Fidelity's just a trash hauling company, Daniel. Are you done highlighting? Your highlighter's done.
My highlighter doesn't work.
Jesus. The fee, which appears to have been implemented, designed to ensure that each... designed that each fund firm meets a minimum required payment to Fidelity. By making the charge as an infrastructure fee, the fund firms may be able to avoid disclosing it to investors. I'm telling you, when we share with you that unless we're forced to invest in mutual funds, you don't know how nefarious they are. The kickbacks, 12B1 fees, if you want to question the person who sold you a mutual fund, is what is what they get. They get these kickbacks in disguise of 12B1 fees. They send them on vacations. Well, Tim, that's not allowed. There's ways around everything. They call this an infrastructure fee because Fidelity's golden goose fees is being because of the democratization of information and the prevalence of and the ease to set up an ETF or a mutual fund. Well, we got to get it somewhere. So let's design a fee that can't be seen by anyone. How are they not the Wells Fargo of this industry?
Ouch.
Right? But seriously, I know I'm being a little hyperbolic here, but how are they? This is not. How is not disclosing a fee? You're not. And by the way, when they get fined for doing this, it doesn't, when Elon Musk gets fined by the SEC again and the SEC spending taxpayer dollars, because they don't like the way he keeps thumbing, giving them the middle finger, double middle fingers. It doesn't make our system any safer. It doesn't make our system in America any better. The fees go into a black pit, never to be seen again. Well, what do you want, Tim? I want people to go to freaking jail. I want Kerry Tolstead of freaking Wells Fargo, who hightailed it from San Francisco to Nebraska to hide in a bunker. I want her ass in jail. Well, that's a little harsh. She knew what she was implementing as the head of the customer departments and the tellers at all the branches at Wells Fargo. She knew this. This wasn't unknown to her, all that fake account opening. If more people went to prison for their crimes. Like, they've got this Nissan guy in prison in Japan. Let's bring that over here. I probably don't want that system over here. But if more people went to prison for these types of things, I think it's a deterrent. Now, granted, I have a moral compass, so the prison isn't my everyday deterrent in life. You know, we shouldn't do that, Danny, because we're going to go to prison. Like, that thought doesn't strike my head. But
you don't
have
to worry about it.
But yeah. I'm also not the who sits in Fidelity's ivory towers in Massachusetts and goes, you know what? Let's get a fee onto the people and let's not tell anyone. How does that meeting start? Like, how does that internal memo get distributed? Hey, secret meeting about the fee we're going to people with. But all of you with Fidelity, how many of you defend your little brokerage? Because you get nothing to defend, by the way, stock nerds and market lovers. Like, you get angst and you write to us or you call Danny to complain about me when I go after the thing that you love. I love Fidelity. They give me really good customer service. They're screwing you. Where there's smoke, there's fire. You think this is the only obscure fee that Fidelity has? You're full of it. This is on par with Stephanie Link telling people, well, stocks, I just can't, I've got too many losses. I can't sell them in the fourth quarter of 2018. What the hell? And you buy this up. I'm not yelling at you, stock nerds, but people lap this up because they've been trained in this financial industry to bend over and take it. Well, there's nothing we can do about it. How about you demand that the fees that these people, I mean, the fines that these people pay, get a better system or build a prison for them? I'll tell you what. Some of the hardened criminals in America, you put Kerry Tolstad and the person who designed this obscure fee next to them in a cell, and they're not, they'll come out and they'll scare people. They'll scare people like what do they call that?
Scared straight.
Scared straight, yeah. They'll scare them straight. They won't even jaywalk after this. Or better yet, send them, you know what? Let's make a reality show. Let's send them some kind of Marine boot camp for fee criminals. And then we'll all watch it.
Well, that'd be better than one of their white-collared prisons where they get to play golf.
Do they get to play golf?
There's some white collar prison. They may not have a golf course, but they got tennis courts. They got, you know, it's little things.
Got to work off the stress,
yeah,
right?
They need to go to high security.
By May, okay. So
it's kind of funny because I actually had a very similar.
It's ridiculous.
Same thing.
We don't coordinate
the show, and I actually had a similar article talking about the same thing.
Fund companies that declined to pay the amount. Listen to this nonsense. Fund companies that declined to pay the amount. They don't pay up to the mob, right?
They don't get to be on the
platform. They don't pay up to Fidelity Soprano.
Fidelity Soprano.
That's the new wife of Tony. Well, Tony's dead. He actually had a heart attack in Italy. Who was that? James Gandolfini.
So they say.
You know, no. James Gandolfini, unfortunately. His son's going to star in the prequel. They're making a prequel, like Newark's Angels or something like that. I've got that butchered, but they're making a prequel to The Sopranos.
Cool.
And Tony Soprano's son is playing
his young Tony.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've got, oh man, who's the actor that does the anti-smoking commercials now? Ray Liotta.
It's got
Ray Liotta cast in that thing too.
Really?
Yeah, it's a pretty. I'll say that fund companies that decline to pay Fidelity Soprano the amount will be subject to a very limited relationship. The hell does that even mean?
I know exactly what it means.
Yeah.
It means it's a $49.95 expensive transaction fee, not the free or not the
A very limited relationship with the company, the document says. Funds can either pay the fee themselves or Daniel, this is verbatim. Funds can either pay the fee themselves or push the cost onto investors in the mutual fund. This can increase the overall fees of a fund, causing individual investors to pay more and dent returns. Do you think there's any company who's on the platform that's absorbing that fee? No, gosh darn. Like, stock nerds, if you listen, we get just thousands of people that listen to this show every week. And so here's the thing I beg of you. If you have a 401k or IRA, you have to ask the person who put you in, or you have an investment advisor that has you in mutual funds. You got to go ask some questions. You got to find out why. Like if you walked into stripmalladvisor.com and found yourself in a Fidelity branch, why don't you have any other funds than Fidelity? Because they want more of the money. It's not because they're better funds. It's because they just want more of it. And if you got some other funds, well, what made this fund a better choice? There's a really good chance, because there's so much overlap in the fund industry, and there's only so many investable stocks, there's a really good chance, stock nerds and market lovers, that the person who put you in that fund wanted the free golf clubs they were going to give as the prize for the person who sold the most mutual funds that month. That's right. I use the word sold the most mutual funds, because you, to the investment community, not to Revere Asset, to the investment community, are the product. Some of you get so upset and so irate about Facebook, and you complain about Facebook and their data given away, and then they're spying on me, and you get mad because Google seems to always know what you want because they've got the microphones turned on to your computer, and they know what you're searching for, and you get upset, but you don't get pissed about this. You don't get mad about this. You're the product to them. You are no different. You're the Facebook piece of meat to Fidelity.
You're the cattle.
And yet you don't get up in arms about it. No, what you do is you have an entire industry that has designed commercials to tell you to stay the course, even though the course might not be right for you, even though the course might be the thing that takes away a college education for your children, even though the course staying might be the thing that doesn't allow you to put your spouse in the quality long-term care that they need as they're declining in their years. But they don't tell you that, because what they're not telling you is that if you went to 100% cash just once or twice, it would screw the person who's managing your account, because they don't get paid, meaning Fidelity's people, E-Trade's people, Schwab's people, Ameritrade's people don't get paid if you're in cash. Get a clue. Start asking questions. The first one would be, why am I in what I'm in? The second one would be, what's your cell discipline to protect my wealth? The most dangerous thing in this industry is the presumption of success. You just think it's going to go back up. And they do all these, it's really miraculous, quite frankly, things to the indices to make sure that the presumption of success comes true. But then there's these couple moments in time where the presumption of success isn't true, and it wipes out some of the fish that are swimming in the sea. But believe me, the fish that get wiped out, they're just the sacrificial lambs. You know, it didn't work out for you, but it worked out for 80% of the other people. They don't care about you. You just hope you're not one of the 20% that gets wiped out by the next mess. But if you ask questions, like, why am I in what I'm in? And then, or more importantly, what's my sell strategy to protect gains if we should have another 20%, 30% decline? What are we going to do? We're going to stay the course. Man, I'm telling you, Danny, this industry, I can't stand it because they just screw people. We and at Fidelity, thank God we don't do business with Fidelity. We at Fidelity are going to have a meeting about a secret fee that's going to blank people. Like, that's the crux of a meeting that took place in Fidelity. All those commercials where they pretend to care about you are such bull bleep. Nobody in this, I care about you. I'm not in this industry. I've distanced myself so far from this industry. This industry is a cold sore. Nobody goes near people with cold sores. I don't go near people with cold sores. Cold sores are, we're not going to shake hands. Don't scratch your, no. I thought you were giving me a sign. Like this industry.
I had an itch.
Oh, okay. This industry is a cold sore, man. And I don't want to be anywhere near it. Like, who are the white hats? Cincinnati Life? The person who sold you an annuity? And then they twist you when you don't even need it? How about those people at Northwestern Mutual gouging people on life insurance they don't need and telling them they need to pay up more because you have to when you really don't? When? I mean, and stock nerds and market lovers, it's not you. It's your parents that are getting hosed. It's your brother and sister. Now, if you don't like your parents or your brothers and sisters, don't tell them anything I've said. But if you care about the people around you, you've got to educate them. Like if you say, like, how do you pay it forward in life? You stop letting people get screwed by Fidelity. That's how you do it. You don't sit on your duff and just keep all the good information to yourself. Look, if we had everybody who listened to the show become a client, I probably wouldn't do the show anymore. I would do the show because I care about people. But my point being is not everyone's a client, and we know that. And so we present information that hopefully you can help yourself. As a matter of fact, I think the majority of our audience are excited individual investors, which is a fantastic thing. And that's why I always say it's the loved ones around the people listening to the show. Because the people that aren't listening to the show, they've just been brainwashed by the marketing. It's an onslaught. There's no one taking an ad out going, Fidelity is blanking you this week. You should probably look into it. Man, it's just so frustrating. The infrastructure fee appears to be a way for Fidelity to make up for revenue the firm has lost as a result of investors flocking to low-cost mutual funds. No kidding. This is some fantastic journalism by the Journal here. Let's see here. Fidelity calls this situation unsustainable economics in the document. Fidelity's telling you, we better figure out a way to get more money out of people because we can't compete with the firms that are offering it for free. Someone's going to email me going, you know, they've got no-cost funds too, Tim. Yeah, there's nothing for free. When I said at the beginning of the show, you can't afford free. You're going to get hit somewhere. I choose to want to pay for things so I know the charges. Everybody wants, there's no free lunch. There could be a low cost lunch, but typically there's no free lunch. And so I think people get the point there.
Well, I'd like to make a couple comments.
Go ahead.
So it's kind of funny because, like we said earlier, we don't practice this. I actually had a separate article about this same thing.
Oh, we don't plan the show together.
So when you started talking about it, I thought you had mine. So, but I will tell you, that's the DOJ investigation.
No, this is the Department of Labor.
I mean, Department of Labor, DOL, I'm sorry, yeah. Department of Labor. You know where I really think they're going to get in trouble? So the ERISA, which is, I think, under the Department of Labor, but the ERISA rules, the ERISA is where it's going to get really ugly. So this person from T-Mobile, the 401k at T-Mobile, this individual sued Fidelity.
Oh, like a stock nerd.
Like so. A stock nerd.
Sued, yes. Sued Fidelity.
Sued Fidelity. And yeah, it's part of the T-Mobile plan. And he awesome. Basically, listen, he's a QB. He says these fees cost the plan tens of millions of dollars. Okay. He claims that the fees were not directly related to any additional services. He said the payments violate ERISA's prohibited transactions, creating a pay-to-play scheme between Fidelity and third-party mutual fund companies. That's what you were talking about. Yeah. Now, when you violate ERISA rules, that can also come with automatic jail time and automatic fines per offense. Now, let me finish before you say something.
Yeah.
He said that the payments were not disclosed to the participants, which you've always got to do that. ERISA indirect compensation. Fidelity, the suit also alleges Fidelity prohibits mutual funds from disclosing these payments. You mentioned that. And it says Fidelity engaged in self-dealing by paying itself kickback fees from assets contained in the retirement plan's omnibus account. Fidelity breached its duty as a plan fiduciary. Now, remember, Harvard sued them a while ago, some of the employees from Harvard. So remember I told you when we were analyzing the Harvard plan that some other plans will start doing this and you'll start getting class action suits and the dam will break. You may see, this may just be the tip of the iceberg. They may be in a bunch of hot water. And when Harvard came out, they were trying to unwind their fiduciary culpability. They're trying to say, you know, we're not going to be a fiduciary anymore. We're just kind of so mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting.
Well, and think about this industry as a whole. It's contracting. It's being
contracting.
It's not contracting per se. It's being out innovated. There's younger firms. There's smaller people.
Right.
Coming up with better ways to do things. And because of the democratization of information, and there are laws to protect investors, you're not unwilling to take a chance on some other service or some other platform. This industry, if you want to know what a cesspool where Fidelities live, in the neighborhood that Fidelities live in, the cesspool that it is, Bank of America has decided to drop the lynch from Merrill. Like it has such a bad connotation, and people that are younger, not 80 and above, people that are younger, they're like, well, what's this Merrill? Like they think they're going to fool them. Bank of America, I don't know if they got their arm twisted to buy Merrill Lynch, or, you know, they were forced to in 2008 when all that was going down in the financial crisis. Who knows? But what a horrible buy. Like Merrill, who wants to do business with Merrill Lynch? What do you stand for? What are the core values of Merrill Lynch? Who's the Merrill Lynch representative loyal to? As a fiduciary shop, our only loyalty is to the clients. So we're always client-centric. Do you think I like coming up? Like, it doesn't happen that often, but hey, in a video, like, you know, we sold a couple. Boy, I'll do this example. Green Dot, I took an 8% loss on Green Dot earlier in January. But, you know, you contain your losses to single digits. It's all good. I don't think it makes you look great when you go out there, but I think the honesty is what's appreciated, right? Why are you looking at me like I've got...
No, I'm great.
Oh, yeah. And so there's no one from Merrill doing that. Merrill Lynch, if anyone's confused. They just changed their name this week, so let me be
They're clear. Lynching Merrill.
Yeah, and so what... This industry, man, it's just not transparent. Clearly, when they have meetings about secret fees that we can impose on people, it's not transparent, and there needs to be some ramp. There's no ramifications, and someone's going, yeah, well, Congress needs to do something. Well, that's a whole another show, folks, about lobbying and why things don't, like the annuity industry the annuity industry in America, Cincinnati Life, Northwestern Mutual, took so much money that they've taken from clients in fees and lined the pockets of so many politicians that they turned off one of the laws designed to protect you. That transformative law that was going to stop the annuity industry in its tracks from doing what the annuity industry does, which is sell you insurance products that you don't need at high fees.
Big commissions, yeah.
Yeah, big commissions. They took the money they've taken from everybody else that's bought an annuity, and they lined the pockets of the politicians to overturn the law. That's what happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what happened. And the people that have gotten hurt by the annuities actually paid so other people could get hurt. It won't stop until you stop buying annuities, folks. And I don't know when that goes out of vogue. I don't know. Maybe this, maybe my generation, maybe the generation below me says, why? Why would I do that? There is a set, there is a seismic shift in the way consumerism is done with my generation and the generation below me. Let's hope it puts out that industry to pasture. Let's hope that the Carrie Tolsteds of the Wells Fargos are put out the pasture. Let's hope that Fidelity comes asunder from all of this nefarious activity. Because I'll tell you what, it is ruining the ability to achieve the American dream through investing. When people say the game is rigged, Fidelity is the pinnacle of having a meeting to set fees that are undisclosed. Because if you had the fees in front of you, and you saw an infrastructure fee, you'd be like, what the hell is this? It's absolutely asinine that even made it out there, that nobody, the person who's supposed to prevent that something from ever happening, nobody at Fidelity stopped it. Unbelievable. It really is sad. And how many pension funds?
You're going to see big 401k funds or more employees of those funds lining up to get to jump on this suit. See, I think that lawyers are going to start making. Remember the one at Harvard, Abby Johnson, the CEO of Fidelity. She was on the board Harvard. Yeah, wow. Of Harvard in the 401k plan, and they were acting as an administrator.
This Abby Johnson would eat her young. She would absolutely eat her young. She's on the board of Harvard gouging them.
Yeah.
She would eat her young. Her and Carrie Tolstoy should get a cell together. I haven't brought Don into the show. I think he's going to get mad at me.
I don't think I want any part of this conversation.
just naming names. I named Don. How you doing, Don?
Just naming people that eat their young.
You know, Warren Buffett, he released his letter last week and the earnings. Yeah. And it's interesting. I was listening to a conversation Warren Buffett was having on CNBC. I was playing a video back. And it was interesting about when they were talking to Buffett about an investing topic. And Warren Buffett says how you value the business is so important. And it struck me, this isn't a criticism of Warren Buffett, but it's a criticism of how people have just absolutely misconstrued how to trade and invest. And by trade, I don't mean day trading. I just mean how to invest and trade, because what you think is an investment might turn out to be a trade based on market conditions.
Right, right.
Remember, the presumption of success is the most damning thing in this industry. And so Warren Buffett's talking about valuing. He bought Kraft Heinz and he bought Oracle and like he actually owned the stock there for like a cup of coffee like a day,
right.
and Apple. And it's like, well, how you value the someone tweeted in the question, like what's the best way to pick a stock or something like that? And he answers, it's how you value the business. Stock nerds, I don't think you subscribe to this, but your loved ones do. You don't know how to value a business. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes of any of the companies you own. You only know what's publicly made information. Do you think you know that Kraft was being so cut to the bone by 3G Capital that they took none of the money they saved and put it into reinvesting in newer growth opportunities? And now Kraft Heinz finds themselves in the bottomless pit that they're in. They find themselves in a bottomless vat of Velveeta cheese, and they can't get and they can't get out. No, you don't know that until they do what? Until they make it public. By the way, it's been years. They make it public that Heinz has had to take a write down on the entire Kraft acquisition and $15 billion worth,
right.
And that they have no prospects for growth. Oh, I guess the shareholders who got sold the bill of goods, and you're like individual shareholders are probably the smallest thing. It's the lump sum of pension funds and mutual funds and hedge funds that have gotten hosed, which, by the way, trickles back to who? The individual investors who took a 30% haircut last week and continued to do so. You don't know everything. You don't know how to value that business because you're not in the books currently. You know last quarter's information. Last quarter's information didn't send Kraft Heinz down over 30%. But this, you mean to tell me that it all happened this quarter? No. It was a lack of transparency.
It's when the dam broke and the story was leaked.
And they couldn't hold it back anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to screw the people on this one. So when you say you want to invest like Warren Buffett, he's buying whole businesses, or he's investing enough stock-wise that he could buy whole entire businesses, maybe not Apple. But you can't do that. You can't afford to do that. What you're investing is your nest egg that you're trying to grow. He's got several eggs. So when
and he's also investing honestly in perpetuity. I mean, he's got he truly does have a very long horizon because it doesn't matter.
Forever.
It's going on.
He's got forever.
Whereas you is much shorter.
Right. And so it just points out that people don't get it. You think you're buying. Let me tie a couple of things in here. You think you're buying an investment. I am going to get fit. So going back to the you are what you know discussion, which I want to get to in a moment. You know, so you buy Fitbit. And you're like, I wear a Fitbit. My kid wears Fitbit. I see my fat dog wearing a Fitbit. That's actually a Fitbark. And so...
Bada bing.
Yeah, bada bing. Well, which is where Tony Soprano used to go with his other comrades when they were not hauling trash. The bada bing. You don't know that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you do know that?
I do know that.
Okay. So...
one of my favorite shows.
Okay. So Fitbit. And the invest what you know crowd, or invest what you see crowd. It's down since it went public 82%. 82%. And when do you get out? How do you know how to value the Fitbit business? Like I don't know what Warren Buffett's sell strategy, folks, if you're newer to the show, is just, hey, when's your uncle point? When are you going to get out to preserve your capital so you can invest another day? What point is that for you? Every one of our portfolios at Revere Asset, if you go to revereasset.com, about a third down the homepage, you'll see five buttons. Those are the five in-house portfolios that we run. We don't custody any assets, stock nerds. You know that, but a lot of the newer people don't. Everything we do is designed to protect the customer and be client-centric. Now, back to Fitbit and Warren Buffett. When does he sell? Like, he got into Oracle and got out of Oracle right away. Okay?
I've changed my mind.
Well, what causes that? Kraft hasn't been a leader forever, or Kraft Heinz. I'm in too deep now. Like, him and Stephanie Link think the same. Like, well, I can't sell it now. You know, he got a several billion dollar haircut last week. And like, at what point do you go, I should probably preserve some capital here? Because it doesn't matter to him. But you stock nerds and market lovers, not you, I shouldn't say you, your loved ones, your friends, your family, they buy Fitbit because it's the revolution, and they've lost almost over 80% of their investment. Because you don't have, because you've been brainwashed by the mantra. You've been brainwashed by the Fidelity commercials, by the Northwestern Mutual Life commercials. There's very few people that, we're so unique to this space to actually tell you what's going on. And whether you become a client, it doesn't matter. We'll share it with you. Because that's how you pay it forward, going back to something earlier. But friend of the show, Uncle Tony, okay? Uncle Tony, and by the way, this person, Tony, Uncle, I can use his last name, right? Do I use his last name?
Uncle Tony.
Uncle Tony. He is, when I tell you, one of the most generous, kind human beings. He is so good to the Marines in San Diego and the military in general. And his heart is as big as his country, as wide, his heart is twice the size. So Uncle Tony is a genuinely good human being. And I love Uncle Tony because he raises points. He lets us know when he doesn't agree. He's a dedicated listener to the show. I've known Tony for years. And so he sends this email. Greetings, gentlemen, to your podcast. You made comments about people trying to buy only what they know. Doctors buying medical stocks, engineers buying tech stocks. Example, don't poo-poo this outright. I've made nice coin by using my knowledge in the tech sector. There's nothing wrong with using your training for stock filtering. This is tying into what I want to talk about here. I've done a lot better than most of the, I'll say it, dweeb, he says it, dweeb fund managers. I'll do you one better. The tech expert on CNBC, John Ford, is a tech airhead. You know, and the need to be honest, he says things that are flat. He says things that are flat wrong. He was on today talking to. This is the part of the letter I didn't really need to read. I should have screened this a little bit better. There's a little bit I want to get down to. But if you want some John Ford gouge here, I'll give it to you. He was on today talking about how cool 5G is and how we need it. 5G is a cool concept, but it's vaporware today. He has no idea how much data is pushed via 4G and why we're running into data restrictions. He's a moron that looks good on TV. Very sad. Gosh, I actually must have brushed. I didn't realize that was a paragraph he wrote. Let's see here. I use my technology in certain sectors.
But other than that, he's a very sweet guy.
Yeah, well, Tony is a sweet guy. So Tony goes on. I should probably screen this just a little bit closer now. If I use my technology in certain sectors, such as additional tool technology I have, I do very well. As an example, Xilinx does very well in development cycles because that is their world. Once the Qualcomm and Intels of the world have final designs, they roll them up into a custom chip. In the meantime, they clean up. And so Tony takes his knowledge and invests in it. Mm-hmm. And so with the in like his world, Tony is chips. Tony is a lot of technology that makes radios work.
Mm-hmm. Tony also has something even more important than everything that he mentioned in there. And that's a sell strategy if the idea goes south.
Yeah, right.
And so some of Tony's stock picks, though, they're not. It's not that Tony doesn't do the research and doesn't know the fundamentals of the company. It's that sometimes they get caught up in the market cycle.
Yes.
And I think oftentimes, I'm not saying this about Tony, I want to be very clear, but I think oftentimes people in the buy what you know crowd, they don't understand that the market's just ebbing and flowing and they're in an ebb. But then what's going to happen, it's going to flow, and then you get the 80% disaster that is Fitbit. And it's no different than somebody who has used the Weight Watchers service as a way to get more healthy and to get their lives back in shape, you know, physically. Mm-hmm. And by
or
the way,
Blue Apron.
Yeah, or Blue Apron. And it doesn't, by the way, just because you're in shape doesn't make you a better person. Skinny people are mean. You can lead your notes off with that, Danny. Skinny people are mean. And so Danny's the one who types that. If you want to know where the notes come from when you get this email, by the way, you can get the podcast as soon as it drops. If you subscribe to it, we don't do anything with that information. We don't do anything with any information. You ever subscribe to the video newsletter, which is free? It comes to you five nights a week. Same thing with the podcast. The moment it drops, you get it. We never spam you. That's our process. Everything we do is client-centric. You don't want to be called. We're not calling you. You want our services, you want the strategies to which we espouse, more than happy to help you. But like with Weight Watchers, you know, you use the service and you buy, and it goes up tremendously after Oprah Winfrey gets involved with it, right? Yeah, Weight Watchers is struggling, man. It's down 42%. It's down 70% over the last year, 42% this year. So over the last 365 trading days, Weight Watchers has lost 70%. This year, 42%. You know, January 1.
Hey, that's right in line with the William O'Neill average on when growth leaders top.
Yeah, and so that is ironic, Don. And but you're left holding the bag because you subscribe to the buy what you know, and you think you're valuing a business. You're a pawn in the game, and when you realize that, and I don't mean that derogatorily. When you realize that, you understand you have to be quick and cunning, and you have to actually have a sell discipline to get out ahead of the onslaught.
You mean you're not an insider, right?
Yeah.
You know the knowledge, yeah.
Yeah. And so, by the way, let them find out if Oprah dumped any shares. I'm not saying she did. And I doubt she did. But you have to get out before these avalanches happen. But because you've been sold that you can value a business, how many of you knew how to value Weight Watchers? Or they're rebranding to WW, which is, you know, because people didn't like the connotation. It looks like keto diets are killing Weight Watchers. And how many did you, every time I go to buy a Fitbit, they're all sold out. Well, it's Christmas time. People have run out of good ideas. But
well, Apple Watch has incorporated a lot of their functions.
Right. And so just keep that stuff in mind. that the cycle that okay, is am I a great stock picker or is the trend higher? And that's not to berate anybody. Look, I'm participating in the same game you are. And so, yeah, like if you can buy a really fundamentally sound company, but it's not going to go anywhere price appreciation wise, or it'll go down if it's in the wrong market environment. And so maybe you use your buy what you know to form a watch list and see how they do. But even better, you can fearlessly buy any stock in the entire stock market universe if you know how to sell. And that's the little secret about the industry, that 99.99% of the people in this industry don't know how to sell.
No, it's buy. It's you buy. Know, my they never tell you how to sell.
My mentor in this industry told me, he goes, anyone can get you into a stock. Only a few people can get out. That resonated with me to this day. That was 10 years ago.
That's a pretty good impression.
Yeah.
That is a very good impression. That's awesome.
That's William O'Neill. And man.
Sounds just like him.
It's the honest to God's truth. Man, Bill knew. I mean, Bill was so experienced when I met him. Jesus. I mean, 23 lifetimes before, you know, he's lived investor-wise when I was just getting started. And it's so true. How many of you have gotten into stocks or trades or investments and you have zero idea how to proceed? It's like getting in the car, heading somewhere, and have zero idea where you're going. But yet, every day, you're sold by somebody on something to take some kind of action, and you do. And it's a sin and a doggone shame that it's allowed to go on. And that's why I rail against it. It's why I try to educate you to it, because it shouldn't be allowed to go on. China stats, Daniel. So a lot of people... you shouldn't invest in 2019. 2019 is going to be a wreck of a year. 2019 is going to be awful after last fourth quarter, mm-hmm. 2018. And the tariffs are going to destroy us. And look, we're not a political show, but the political situation is going to destroy the markets and you shouldn't invest. And here we are, China, with an export number just released, 10 worst export number in 10 years. Do you realize that's the Great Recession? Mm-hmm. 10 years is the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. Their worst export number since the Great Recession. And America's GDP, even after that
horrendous number,
horrendous fourth quarter, actually did just fine when it was reported on Thursday. Like there's two countries going in opposite directions. And in an effort to drive home my concept of first price, then news, do you think how the market traded now from January to this point? Maybe it knew, right? Someone's going to say, this is Fed induced. This is Fed induced. Oh, man, I don't disagree with you one bit. And let me tell you something. I was the one telling you it was Fed-induced back in the fourth quarter, but I was also telling you that on January 4th, man, we got really long in the shop.
Well, whether it's Fed-induced or not, what are you going to do about it?
That's my next point.
You can
go with the trend if you want to. You can go with the trend if you want to. Or you can sit there and pout and then yell into the windstorm that is Twitter, and no one's going to hear you, nor do they care.
Look, it doesn't matter who's in office, what your politics are, you've got to follow and see what the markets are doing. Don't try to force and fit your belief, Fitbit, don't fit your...
Yes, there you go.
Your belief into... People try to force their... reality or mm-hmm. what they think is their reality, whether it's right or wrong, into what the market should be doing.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, that's guaranteed it, man.
I've got some interesting, we'll do some market stuff here in a second, but I've got some really interesting email that's come across the transom lately, and I want to share it with listeners because I think if somebody emails me in something, unless it's really uber specific, that a lot of the stock nerds, there's a good number of stock nerds probably thinking about it. So let me share this with you. Let me see. Boy, I wrote her a lot. Okay. So this person writes to me, "Hey, Tim, I've been watching your daily and weekly videos the last couple of months. Long story short, I've been trying to learn about the stock market for the last year, and your commentary on the market is pretty much reflective of everything I have learned." Well, I guess that's good. My father died last year, and I've been doing my research to figure out the best strategy to invest my inheritance. I've been planning, pardon me, to reach out to set up a time to talk with you, and I had a crazy experience very early this morning. I left my computer on bullishbears.com. They're one of the websites I've been following. I've never heard of this website before, and I went to bed last night. At 3 a.m., I woke up and heard a video playing on the computer in my office. Someone on the Bullish Bears website was playing a video. I got up, turned off the computer, and the video sucked me in. It's from something called Theotrade. This Theotrade's Don Kaufman. I met Don Kaufman when I worked at Investors Business Daily. You're probably aware of everything discussed, but it was a revelation to me. I've not heard this analysis from anyone in my research. Short explanation about the analysis this person heard is the low liquidity in the market and how Boeing is moving the entire market right now. Lots of food for thought. I wanted to share it with you. I would be interested in your thoughts. I think you'll find it very interesting. I want to read my response, and then I want Don to comment on the letter I just read. So I responded. Where did I respond? Thank you so much for tuning in my videos and podcasts. It means the world to me. We never know who's tuning in. Let me, here we go. I've never heard of Bullish Bears, but I've been the victim of getting sucked into market articles and videos in the middle of the night because I fall asleep with my phone in my hands, which I hear is unhealthy. Yeah, here is unhealthy. I've totally heard of Theotrade, met Don Kaufman. Let's see here. Oh, here you go. I don't disagree. Okay, you are correct. I do find Theotrade analysis interesting. I don't agree with them. The disagreement doesn't emanate from a desire to be perceived as right or smarter than those folks. The market is very large, and there is room for many opinions. I don't believe the question posed is right because of what I'm seeing in regards to price. As the market uptrend has grown, the equal-weighted index ETFs have made new highs. Market breadth has grown. Stocks making new 52-week or all-time highs has also grown after the steep sell-off last quarter. I could go on and talk about new leading groups and sectors, which is a sign of strength, but it really doesn't matter. When folks start blaming market moves on one stock or factor, there's usually one underlying message they're not telling you. They're on the wrong side of the trend, or they're trying, in an effort to curry favor with like-minded viewers, appeal to those who have missed the move while providing those same viewers with the most dangerous risk in any market, and that's confirmation bias. When a fledgling uptrend attempts to begin, it's rules that get you in and allow you to participate. The market gods don't call down from high to tell investors that the rally, if it should blossom, is going to be a narrow rally and you shouldn't participate. Stocks send the signaling to either stay in and allow the uptrend to grow or get out because the attempted uptrend is failing. In both cases, it is rules that get you in and keep you in, and rules that get you out and protect your wealth. Once in an uptrend, it's the price action of stocks or the facts that dictate what, if any, action to take next. If you would look in my journal, you'd see that equities were bought this year on January 2nd and 4th. I added on the 10th, 15th, 24th, and 31st. I added positions this month on the 13th and 26th. You've not heard me cite narrow market or project theories in my analysis of markets because the why about something has happened in markets almost always occurs after the price has been printed. It's rarely the other way around. That's another way of saying first price, then news. Right. Buying rules get you into attempted uptrends and a disciplined sell strategy protects your wealth in the event that the attempted uptrend doesn't grow. The same rules keep you in and help you to know when to add to positions. Market theorists don't make for actionable investors. Let me read that again. Market theorists don't make for actionable investors. If they invest, they are often guessing at direction and wasting valuable capital. Oftentimes, it's not their money, so there is no consequence for their arrogant guessing. Market strategists allow the facts of price to guide them. It's a tremendous difference in how investors should approach markets. The facts of price protect against the wealth-destroying theorist. If investors ask themselves one simple question that I have devised over the years, what is price asking me to do, they'd be better off. This simple question allows investors to inoculate themselves against bias. But what is truly confidence-inducing is the knowledge that my sell rules will get me out should markets falter. And that's what relieves the fear of stepping in the markets in the first place. It's not about being right, wrong, or having a theory. It's about risk and participation. I go on to say a few other things. But that is what is not being shed a light on in this industry, what I just said there. Don, what are your thoughts?
you just summed up our whole approach, and it's fact-based. It's like Joe Friday from Dragnet. Just the facts, ma'am. That's all that matters. No opinions, just the facts.
Well, speaking of opinion, not opinions and facts, Don, what are you seeing for the markets in the upcoming week? And by the way, in full disclosure, we're taping the show a day early because of contractual obligations, as I like to say. And so so do know that if the world were to fall into itself on Friday afternoon, it's not covered in this podcast. But just in case the world does fall into itself Friday afternoon, I hope you guys are protected. Okay. Go ahead, Don.
I continue to see what I've been saying on the videos for the last 2 weeks, that every time sellers try to come in, buyers take the upper hand, and we're supported at the 10 simple moving average. And until that changes, you let it go as far as it wants to go.
Right.
Leaders are working, price and volume of leaders. The indexes are healthy. QQQ tested and held the 200-day. The small cap IWM is trying to get above the 200-day. To join the Dow, which has been there for a while, and the S&P, which has been there for a couple weeks now. And everybody calling for a sell-off has been wrong, unless you count a sell-off down to the 10 simple moving average or the 80 EMA. They're always very close in hand. But until that changes, the market's healthy. Every correction has been a buying opportunity, and distribution has been minimal. Distribution meaning heavy selling on heavy volume.
Which has been fascinating because people like to invest, you know, like they want to. It's interesting. People go to Vegas and they'll gamble, right?
Right.
But, and they don't know the outcome. But they'll only invest if they can assure themselves of the most best possible outcome. And yet they're looking for the reason to step in. And the reason's been there every day in 2019. It's been price. The price action of the indices, but because they don't know the news yet, they're not in. And my point being, stock nerds and market lovers, there is a tremendous amount of money sitting on the sidelines. This price action has occurred with a bunch of people sitting on the sidelines. There will come a point where that money, especially if it's held by managers, cannot sit on the sideline anymore. It'll have to be put to work. We're taping this show on the last trading day of the month. The first trading day of the month, I'm not using the specific date for a reason because these shows are typically evergreen. If someone goes back and listens to our archive, the first day of the month is typically what I call a jumper trade. Markets jump. It doesn't always have to work that way because that's when a lot of pension fund, mutual fund, hedge fund money gets put to work, the money that's coming
They're putting in their end of the month contributions.
They're putting in the monthly contributions. Yeah. And so the first three trading days of a month typically are the most important. To kind of figure out what's going on. So it'll be really interesting to see if in March, now I am naming the month, if the money gets put to work that's sitting on the sidelines. And if it does, the crowd, which is the biggest crowd out there in the investment community, is saying it's going to pull back. The crowd is typically wrong. So, yeah, and you don't have to buy things extended. There's a lot of things. As a matter of fact, after I asked Don what's on his watch list, I'll give you a couple of things that aren't extended that you can put on a watch list to study here. Don, what you got?
Amazon has been – I've been casting a wary eye toward it recently because relative strength has been below average, but relative strength ticked up over the last week, and it's stayed in a very tight pattern. And if some volume comes into it, could make a run up to the 200-day moving average.
Okay. Anything else?
So many software stocks continue to act well. I think that the best course of action is to buy them when they pull back to the 21 EMA.
Okay. Good stuff. Is that it? Because I've got a few.
I like AMD as it bounced off the 21 EMA also.
All right. So that's like three things. All right. I'll give you any last alibis there.
I like how you joined me in CMG on that nice tight pattern along the 600
level. Yeah, I know. I took a look and looked good. Yep. I like it a lot. Danny, roll the credits and then I'll give my thoughts.
All right, folks, if you like what you heard, please tell a friend, tell a neighbor. You can just go to revereasset.com to sign up. Check out our research, but you can also sign up for our daily market newsletter and this podcast. We won't spam you or reach out to you anyway. It's up to you to contact us. You can email any of us, Dan at revereasset.com, Tim at revereasset, Don at revereasset.com. You can also call us old school at 855-REAL-WEALTH.
All right, so Don took two of them, but I want to talk about CMG here for a second. I really like that chart pattern of CMG. If it gets above 812, it's going to run.
612,
thank you. 612, it's going to run. Which is interesting because Alta is something that I really like here, and Alta is trading phenomenally right now. And if Alta gets above, and it's doing it right now, can hold above 312, it's going to run probably 322. So I like Alta here. And then Don mentioned Amazon. That pattern in Amazon, it is got so many beautiful underlying patterns on its daily pattern right now. It's a market sensitive stock, so if the NASDAQ were to lift in, on, say, the next couple of days, the first several days of the month, I would think Amazon lifts too. So it'd be really interesting to track Amazon.
All right, folks, remember, all these ideas are for your research. Don't just go out and buy it because someone on the radio told you to. We'll talk to you next week. Love your money.